This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. It has been 71 years since the United States dropped atomic bombs on the Japanese cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, obliterating them and massacring hundreds of thousands of people. While Barack Obama earlier this year became the first sitting U.S. president to ever visit the site, the fact is that he was unable to keep his promise of significantly reducing the nation's nuclear arsenal. Now, as we head into the general election in November, much is being made of the GOP nominee Donald Trump and whether he has the temperament to handle having his finger on the nuclear button. In recent days, Trump has made troubling comments in the media about not ruling out nuclear weapons use. Of course, Hillary Clinton, his rival, has also made such comments in the past. My guest is Dr. Zia Mian. He is the director of the Project on Peace and Security in South Asia of Princeton University's Program on Science and Global Security. He is also the co-director of that organization, and he's the co-chair of the International Panel on Fissile Materials. His most recent book is Unmaking the Bomb, A Fissile Material Approach to Nuclear Disarmament and Nonproliferation. He joins me on the program. Welcome to the show, Zia.
Hi, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, we're speaking on Friday. By the time our program airs on Monday, you will have spoken at an event at Princeton to mark this grim anniversary, 71 years since Hiroshima was first bombed. 3 days later, the U.S. bombed Nagasaki. How important is it for us to reflect all these years later on this tragedy, one that probably many young Americans don't really know much about?
I think it's very important that we take time to think about the significance of Hiroshima and Nagasaki for today's world. I mean, it's become commonplace to think about the fact that we live in the nuclear age, and the beginning of that nuclear age was the destruction of two entire cities with just one bomb each. I mean, this was an unprecedented change in our capacity to do catastrophic violence. And humanity has lived with that threat ever since. And so thinking about where we are and our efforts to deal with the risk that now all of humanity runs, given how many nuclear weapons there are in the world, is very important. And I think it's especially something that young people need to focus on, given that they are inheriting the legacy that was created during the Cold War, in which they played no role whatsoever.
I think a lot of people, and I count myself among them, don't really understand the threat that the U.S. is still and the world is still facing from nuclear weapons, because we don't stop to think about how many nuclear weapons still exist, are still in our arsenal, and could still be used because it's been more than 70 years. Now, President Obama began his tenure on the promise of significantly reducing the U.S.'s arsenal. He has not managed to do very much. Short of putting a small dent into it. He did, however, visit Hiroshima earlier this year. How many weapons, as far as you know, does the U.S. still sit on?
The best estimate, and this is actually very important to think about, is that we don't actually know exactly how many nuclear weapons there are in the world, because the nine countries that have nuclear weapons today will not say how many they actually have. So the best thing that we can do is to make an independent estimate. And the best estimates are in the worldwide, there are now almost 16,000 nuclear weapons in the world. Most of them are held by the United States and Russia, which between them have about 15,000 out of the total of 16,000 in the world. And the other seven countries that have nuclear weapons today, which are Britain, France, China, Pakistan, India, Israel, and North Korea, have all, between them, the seven countries have 1,000 nuclear weapons, give or take. So the nuclear weapons problem is about 16,000 nuclear weapons, but almost all of that problem is the United States and Russia. And that's the dilemma that we face, and that's where the policy challenge is, how to get the United States and Russia independently and together to get from the 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 nuclear weapons they have each ready to use down to zero, along with everybody else.
Now, Zia, let's talk about Donald Trump. In recent days, we've heard much made, not just of Trump's temperament and others wondering whether he has the right mental capacity to have his, metaphorically speaking, finger on the nuclear button, but also we've been hearing from Trump himself. But I want to specifically talk about MSNBC's Joe Scarborough basically. Expressed out loud that he had heard that Donald Trump spoke with a foreign policy expert and just repeatedly asked, why can't we use nuclear weapons? And why do we have them if we aren't using them? Now, on the face of it, it sounds like a really dangerous question, but it's sort of a valid one if we turn it around. Why do we have so many weapons if we haven't used them in 70 years and we really shouldn't ever use them?
So the first thing I want to say about this is that Donald Trump is not the first person to think like this. This has been something that all American presidents have actually struggled with when they've been in office. If you look back at the history of the United States and its nuclear weapons, starting with the very first ones that you mentioned at the beginning about ones that was Hiroshima and Nagasaki, even before the first ever bomb was used on August 6, 1945, to destroy Hiroshima, scientists and others were warning the American president, don't do this. Using nuclear weapons would begin a path that would lead to a profound threat to all of modern civilization. So don't do it. He did it anyway. This was President Truman. And every American president since then has struggled with having lots of nuclear weapons at their command and how to use them and when to use them and to threaten to use them. And American presidents threatened to use nuclear weapons many times during the Korean War, during the Vietnam War, and in many other crises since then. And so it's not a surprise to see Donald Trump thinking, well, why can't we use them if we have them? Many American presidents have fought exactly the same question. And I think one thing we need to focus on here is the fact that one of the things that has held American presidents back from using nuclear weapons and has held back other countries from using nuclear weapons that they have has been the fact that everybody knows that the international community and public opinion everywhere would be outraged if there was another use of nuclear weapons. And so this has helped restrain previous American presidents. The power of organized public opinion, of peace movements, and of the many countries in the world that chose not to make nuclear weapons and would not accept the use of nuclear weapons by anyone. And there is a United Nations resolution that goes back to 1961 that says any use of nuclear weapons would actually be a crime against humanity. And so that's a burden that faces every president of a country with nuclear weapons, and it's a burden that Donald Trump would face if he actually became president and wanted to think about using nuclear weapons. But we need to focus on the fact that restraining politicians in crisis when they are thinking about war and national security and they have nuclear weapons, and advisors who will tell them, well, we could threaten to use nuclear weapons, is that you need people organized to stand up and say, we will not accept the use of nuclear weapons. And for that, you need an organized and active peace movement. And this is something we really don't have right now in the United States.
I want to quote Trump himself specifically when asked about nuclear weapons, because today the new bogeyman is the Islamic State, ISIS, and it has become the justification for a new chapter in the US's ongoing so-called global war on terror. So Trump basically said, somebody hits us with an ISIS, you wouldn't fight back with a nuke. I would never take any of my cards off the table. So this is Trump. And of course, there's been an attempt to very much set him apart from his main rival, Hillary Clinton. However, Hillary Clinton herself is not innocent in this. The New York Times did a good job in sort of reminding us of a couple of quotes that she had given at two different times. First, when she was commenting during the Bush era in 2006, when she was asked whether how the Bush administration should try to confront Iran's nuclear program. She said, I would certainly take nuclear weapons off the table. This administration has been very willing to talk about using nuclear weapons in a way we haven't seen since the dawn of a nuclear age. I think that's a terrible mistake. Then a year later, when she ran for president against Obama, she seemed to be a little more vague on this. She said, well, presidents since the Cold War have used nuclear deterrence to keep the peace. And I don't believe any president should make blanket statements with the regard to use or non-use. Zia, if you look at it just from the lens of the likelihood of a president using nuclear weapons or even making threats with nuclear weapons, are Trump and Clinton that different?
They are not that different, but they're not that different from most of the previous people who have run for president or people who have actually been president in the past. As I mentioned, serving presidents have threatened to use nuclear weapons many times in the history of the United States since World War II. So it's no surprise. They're basically fitting within the mainstream of American nuclear thinking by leading policymakers. The person who stands outside this tradition, in fact, is President Obama, who in the past has said that, you know, he doesn't support even the existence of nuclear weapons, and has actually, in his Prague speech in 2009, laid out his hope, and it turned out only to be a hope rather than a concrete policy goal, of a world without nuclear weapons that might be possible within his lifetime. And his lifetime is, you know, we're talking about timescales of decades, whereas most people who are responsible for nuclear weapons in the United States and the other nuclear weapons countries imagine they will have nuclear weapons basically in the indefinite future. So they're making enormous investments in modernizing and maintaining their nuclear weapons for many, many, many decades to come, including the United States. So I think it's worth keeping in mind that the outlier here is not Donald Trump, but it's the fact that the outlier here has been President Obama, who's tried to push the process towards more people understanding the need to get rid of nuclear weapons, as opposed to just having them and thinking about how best to use them.
Right. I mean, he has made much more verbal overtures that have been pretty strong and pretty clear, more so than any other sitting president. And then there have been some presidents like President Carter, who after they left office have also become strong proponents of peace and against nuclear weapons. But while in office, Obama certainly set himself apart, however, has not been able to actually make much progress. Still, there hasn't been as much fear during his candidacy that he would resort to them. Now, Zia, the existence of nuclear weapons, going back to what Hillary Clinton said, that presidents have always used them as deterrents, which was, of course, the big basis in the Cold War, which is why the Cold War was a cold war and not a hot war. This has been a very powerful sort of a rhetorical tool that has real-world impacts. You have a giant nuclear arsenal in the U.S. and you have one in Russia, and they sort of have an unspoken agreement to not use them, and that may be all fine. However, accidents happen. Nuclear weapons can get in the wrong hands. How much do we risk by simply having these weapons exist, even if we know that the person sitting in the White House will not use them?
That, I think, Sonali, is the absolutely most important question that we actually do face with nuclear weapons. And that is the fact that as long as they exist, there is the risk that they will be used. And it's not just by accident. You have to remember that nuclear war plans exist in all the countries with nuclear weapons, that under these circumstances, we will actually launch the end of the world. The United States has plans, Russia has plans, and Britain, France, China, and the other countries that I mentioned earlier also have plans to use their nuclear weapons. So when they talk about it as a deterrent, as if, oh yes, you know, their existence is enough to prevent war, that's actually only half the story. The other half of the story is that they actually have active planning and preparation and training and doctrine to launch their nuclear weapons and actually destroy the world. In the case of the United States, those plans include launching nuclear weapons first at crisis, before the United States has actually attacked with nuclear weapons, to try and destroy the enemy as quickly and as massively as possible. And so we're talking about the United States planning, and now Russia planning, to start nuclear war with hundreds, if not thousands, of nuclear weapons. So we've gone far beyond any discussion of deterrence. Planning and preparation and the size of nuclear forces are actually based not on deterrence, but on fighting nuclear war. And that's the one thing that candidates choose not to talk about. Because I think if people understood that their countries are actually planning to cause mass destruction on an unimaginable scale as part of national security, there would be real questions asked about what do you people think you're doing. But by hiding behind deterrence as if, oh, we wouldn't do anything, that's actually misleading people about the realities of nuclear policy and nuclear planning in all the countries with nuclear weapons.
Right. I mean, if we are not going to use them, let's do away with them. And actually, on that issue, is the U.S. keeping up its nuclear weapons? Because, of course, weapons become obsolete. They have to be kept up. There has to be, you know, the tuning up or whatever, ongoing upkeep. Is the U.S. actively keeping up its nuclear weapons arsenal or even adding to it?
So the United States, under President Obama, because of pressure from a Republican-controlled Congress, has agreed to a $1 trillion upgrade and modernization of the entire U.S. nuclear arsenal.
Wait, $1 trillion? I'm sorry,
yes,
say that again.
$1 trillion, $1 trillion. Planning is to spend $1 trillion, $1,000 billion. To replace and modernize all of the existing current U.S. nuclear weapons, there will be new missiles to carry nuclear weapons, new submarines, new missiles to fit in the submarines, new bombers, new cruise missiles, and new nuclear warheads to fit on all of these things that will take decades to build and develop. And the plan is to basically replace all of the existing U.S. nuclear weapons and the systems and missiles and bombers that carry them with new ones.
All of these weapons that we're supposedly never going to use because they're simply there for a deterrent. Meanwhile, there's never enough money for education, healthcare, etc.
That's absolutely right. And the same is being done by the British and the French and the Chinese and everybody else. They are intending on trying to keep nuclear weapons for as long as they possibly can. And the only way to stop this is basically to have an international treaty that bans nuclear weapons. And this is going to be discussed at the United Nations this autumn in New York. And so people should pay attention to that and try and get involved.
Well, Dr. Zia Mian, I want to thank you so much for sharing this time with us and sharing some of these kind of staggering and shocking facts and figures. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sonali.
Dr. Zia Mian is the director of the Project on Peace and Security in South Asia of Princeton University's Program on Science and Global Security. He also is the co-director of that program, and he is the co-chair of the International Panel on Fissile Materials. His most recent book is Unmaking the Bomb, a Fissile Material Approach to Nuclear Disarmament and Nonproliferation. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.